From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Bridget Dowd with your state and local news update. This week, KTOO's news team is taking a look at Juneau's urban avalanche danger. There's not a great written record of urban avalanches in Juneau. There was a well-documented big one in 1962, but most of what we know about destructive slides from before that comes from one lost photograph and stories from old-timers. There is, though, a vast library of climate data and avalanche records that goes back more than 1,000 years. It's inside the region's trees. Jennifer Pemberton has the story of the researchers trying to get at this hidden history.
On the side of Mount Juneau, known in Tlingit as Yada'at-Katle, there's a swath of the mountain that's been scoured year after year by avalanches. It's called the Barrens Path, because it crosses over Barrens Avenue in a downtown subdivision. There are about 24 houses there that study after study have determined are in an unacceptably dangerous place. It's so steep here and raining so hard, the whole hillside is a waterfall. The avalanche path itself doesn't have trees, just a tangle of alder and other bright green spring bushes. But there are trees along its edge, and Eric Peitsch with the U.S. Geological Survey is visiting from Montana to collect data from those trees. We're just a few hundred feet away from the nearest house, and he's drilling into a big evergreen with a long, thin corkscrew instrument called an increment borer.
It doesn't hurt the tree.
The borer has a nice long handle for leverage, so it kind of looks like Peitsch is changing a tire on a giant sika spruce. It's not backbreaking work, but it's hard. Peitsch and his colleagues are going to sample at least 70 trees over 3 days. One of the grad students' hands are all bandaged up from gnarly blisters he got cranking on the borer all day.
You lucked out there.
Out comes the core.
That was a good pull.
It's thinner than a pencil and like 4 times as long. The rings will have to be counted under a microscope back at the lab. In addition to figuring out how old these trees are, Peitsch and his team are also looking for telltale signs of avalanches.
The scar basically looks like a little black line on the tree ring for that given year.
When an avalanche hits a tree but doesn't knock it over and kill it, it can leave a scar on the uphill side, a place where the bark is gone and leaves a kind of bumpy ridge on an otherwise perfect column of tree trunk. Juneau is unique in how much of the city is at risk from avalanches. By looking for these clues, researchers are trying to reconstruct the frequency of avalanches all around the region, especially in places with impact to human infrastructure like power plants, mines, houses, and the ski area. Eventually, they'd like to match that timeline to climate data. Eric Peitsch lives and works in Montana, but his collaborator, Aaron Hood, is based here in Juneau at the University of Alaska Southeast.
In all the other places I've worked and lived in Colorado and other places, I've never seen that many houses right at the bottom of a major path.
Avalanche mitigation often takes the form of intentionally setting off small slides with explosives to sort of relieve the pressure for potential big ones. That's what Alaska's Department of Transportation does along a stretch of highway that goes to Juneau's Thane neighborhood.
You're worried about a road, and so you close the road, you bomb it, the avalanche comes down, and you clean it up. But that's not an option here in the Barrens Path.
It's way too dangerous to set off small avalanches above the Barrens neighborhood. The path is just too steep, and it's too hard to control how much snow might come down. Houses could get hit. People could get hurt. You could evacuate the homes while you did it, but then you'd also have to close the main road that connects downtown Juneau to its only hospital. The samples being collected today haven't been added in yet, but they've crunched the numbers for 6 different avalanche paths around Juneau going back more than 500 years. And they found that region-wide, the median return rate for damaging avalanches was 9 years. An earlier study estimated that an avalanche reaches the Barrens neighborhood every 15 years. And every 20 to 30 years, there's a slide that's big enough to cause damage to those homes. But that's a number based on data and models. In reality, Aaron Hood reminds me, it's been much longer than that since there was a big one here.
There hasn't been a big avalanche into town really in more than 50 years that's done damage.
The last one was in 1962, and that's enough time for it to be not exactly on everyone's mind all the time.
And so if you think about that as a generational time scale, there are not a lot of people living here that are that worried about it, right?
10 years ago, a study by some Swiss engineers said that the best way to reduce the risk of a dangerous avalanche in the Barents neighborhood was for the city to buy out the houses in the danger zone and make sure no one lives at the bottom of that hill. It wasn't the first time that had been recommended. But the city has never been willing or able to do that. And when the city asked residents in the path if they were interested in having their homes bought out, they received very little response. So here we are, studying in finer and finer detail a risk that you can see plain as day from just about anywhere in town. And on top of that, trying to figure out what wetter, warmer weather might mean for these trees, this hillside, and the people living down below. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jennifer Pemberton.
Interior Secretary Deb Haaland announced Tuesday a new initiative to examine the loss of life and traumatic legacy of boarding schools run by the Bureau of Indian Affairs. The BIA is part of the Interior Department. Haaland, a member of the Laguna Pueblo, is the first Native American to serve as a U.S. Cabinet Secretary.
I come from ancestors who endured the horrors of Indian boarding school assimilation policies carried out by the same department that I now lead. The same agency that tried to eradicate our culture, our language, our spiritual practices, and our people.
Students were often forcibly removed from their families and their way of life. Some didn't see their parents for years at a time. Haaland says the physical and spiritual suffering has harmed entire communities. The Federal Indian Boarding School Initiative will document school policies and shed light on their lasting impact. It will also identify burial sites near the schools and try to name every deceased child sent to them. The initiative is prompted by the discovery of a mass grave in Kamloops, British Columbia, at the site of a former Canadian residential school. 215 children were buried there. Haaland says she and her staffers wept when they heard of it.
Each of those children is a missing family member, a person who was not able to live out their purpose because forced assimilation policies ended their lives too soon. I thought of my own child who carries this generational trauma with them. I thought of my grandmother who told me about the pain and loneliness she endured when the trains took her away from her family to boarding school.
In Alaska in the 20th century, the BIA operated three vocational boarding schools, then ran the Wrangell Institute and Mount Edgecombe School. Thousands of Alaska Native students were sent to BIA schools in the lower 48. Other Alaska boarding schools were operated by churches and later the state. Some former students say they had a choice of schools and report positive experiences. Others tell of beatings and dehumanizing practices. Inupiaq elder Jim LaBelle Sr. was sent to the Wrangell Institute when he was 8. He said on Talk of Alaska Tuesday that all children had an identification number on their government-issued clothes and bedding.
Children who had difficult names were often referred to only by their number by many matrons. And I can still remember years later, children, as we were much older, talking about, gee, I thought my name was my number.
Secretary Haaland has ordered that a final report from the investigation of BIA boarding schools be issued by next April. The Alaska Marine Highway's two former fast ferries are tentatively scheduled to be loaded Friday onto a heavy-lift ship headed for Spain. The catamarans Fairweather and Chiniga were recently sold for about $5 million to a Spanish ferry company and are being shipped via the Panama Canal. The hulking U-shaped vessel Red Z1 has been anchored outside of Ketchikan's Ward Cove since early April. The Ward Cove Group's Stephen Bradford says the captain of the Red Zed has said the ship will start to lower itself into the Tongass Narrows around 1 a.m. Friday. The two ferries are scheduled to be towed out of the cove and loaded between 8 a.m. and 10 a.m. They're expected to depart the Ketchikan area shortly afterwards, but that could change. The 235-foot Fairweather and Chiniga cost the state $68 million to build and came into service in 2004 and 2005, respectively. The catamarans cruised at roughly double the speed of other ferries and were popular with passengers. But the ferries guzzled marine diesel, and that made them expensive to operate. They also struggled in rough seas. The state took the Chiniga out of service in 2015. The Fairweather followed in 2019. Heavy rain is expected tonight, mostly after 8 p.m. The rain will continue tomorrow with a high around 57 degrees.